You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by Flowmax.ie. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favourite podcast outlets such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and be sure to follow us on social media as well. You'll find us on Twitter at Between Stripes, and we're also on Facebook. Simply search for Between the Stripes. Now enjoy this week's show. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. John Breyer, I didn't think we'd be sitting in Longford doing one of these again, but here we are.
Well, since you moved to Dundalk or Newry or wherever you're living, yeah, it's a big surprise. But when we sort of talked about it a few weeks ago, we said, well, we could make it work. So yeah, we're going to do some stuff on Skype in the future, but you were down in Longford today, and we said, let's record a show. We've got a full preview to do. We've loads of interviews that have pre-recorded, and it's amazing and great to be back.
Yeah. Anyway, look, it's not like we would have had a lot to talk about towards the end of last year. I mean, it's not like the FAI tumbled down around itself, that John Delaney was finally removed from his position. It's not like the First Division is about to collapse in on itself. It's not like there's a Rovers B situation. It's not like Limerick is Limerick. It's not like we have referees threatening to go on strike. So really, we had very little to talk about.
You've missed nothing since we were gone, basically. But wow, so much to talk about, Kieran.
Yeah, and where do we start? Where, John, where do we start?
Our shows are normally quite short, aren't they? We can ramble on for well over an hour, and I know you'll be personally very disappointed, because I know he bought you the odd can of beer. John Delaney's gone.
Yeah, John is gone, and I think everyone is sick of talking about that situation, so we definitely won't start there tonight. I think we did do a good bit of that before we finally called it a day last year. But just before we do start, I think we'll start with Limerick tonight. You know, I think we'll start with the situation there, because I want to talk a bit about the First Division situation as well, so we'll tie that all in together. And we have Mike Ahern on the show tonight, the Limerick FC reporter. He's going to give us a bit of an update. In terms of interviews tonight, we have Mike Ahern, we have Vinnie Perth, Darragh Doyle, that's off the back of the friendly game last night, Longford Town 1-0 winners at Oriel Park. And we also have recently retired League of Ireland referee Paul Chute. So we're kind of touching all bases tonight. But I just want to say a massive, massive thank you to everyone who has been in touch in the last couple of days on social media since we announced that we were returning. We posted a little video, I'm sure most of you have seen it. Over 5,000 views on Twitter, John. Similar on Facebook. And we've been absolutely flooded with messages. People are genuinely delighted to see us back. So that's really heartwarming and encouraging for us. So again, thanks to everyone.
Yeah, that's just a matter. I was looking today and it was 5,200 views, a little video you put up, Kieran. And I was just genuinely shocked, you know, the amount of interest. I was going to say excitement there. I don't know if anybody's genuinely excited, but I know I am. But apart from us, it's just fantastic to be back. And I've missed it myself.
Oh, yeah, I've missed it an awful lot. And then it's genuinely happened a good few times where I've been walking around Dundalk and people have come up and, you the lad that used to do the podcast, and they're asking, why is it not running anymore, and is it going to come back? And that kind of gave me the bit of a drive to try and see, could we get it going again? And as you said, we're going to do it over Skype. The only difference between going forward and the last couple of years, it might not always be posted on a Wednesday night because of obviously our work circumstances, and that it might be on different nights. So it's very important you make sure you recheck your subscription wherever you get your podcast from, because it might have unsubscribed since it's so long since we've done a show. So check out your Apple Podcast, your Spotify, wherever you were subscribed. Just make sure, refresh it, unsubscribe and subscribe again if needs be. Just make sure you're subscribed, and that way you'll always get the latest episode delivered to your device.
Yeah, so shall we start with, as I'm going to call them this season, Basket Case FC. What is happening at Limerick, Kieran?
Right, yeah. As I said, we'll have Mike on and now Mike Ahern on the next couple of moments. He's going to try and clear up what's going on. But at the moment, Limerick FC, as we know, what we're told is they weren't given an opportunity to apply for a license, therefore breaking, the FAI were breaking their own rules. Now, that's allegedly what we're told happened. Obviously, there was the court case
legal
off the back
challenge,
of that.
Yep.
We're told there was an agreement for Limerick FC to put in an application. Now, we're about 2.5 weeks away from the start of the season. Limerick FC, I'm told, have no players, no manager, uncertainty over what ground they would play in. And then you've got, obviously, this new club that's been set up, Limerick United, who within a week of setting up have had to change the name to Treaty United, because Limerick United was already a registered trademark name by Limerick FC owner Pat O'Sullivan. So at the moment, you have two clubs in Limerick. Neither are certain to get into the League of Ireland, although we're told it's not the goal of Limerick United to get into the First Division this season. They are going to go into the underage leagues. They're going to run the women's department as well. And then next season, they'll have a view to getting into the First Division. But we're very much told Limerick FC are going to apply for a licence. What a mess.
It's an absolute mess, but I'm glad for one thing. I'm glad that there's going to be some football in Limerick, because, I mean, we do, you know, it's important because it's a big city.
There's huge potential there.
Huge potential. But I'm looking forward to hearing from Mike, because if anybody knows what's going on down there and can give us the background, it's Mike.
Yeah, I think we'll go straight to Mike, because there's not really a lot we can say that will add any more light to this. So perhaps Mike might know a little more. Ladies and gentlemen, our first interview of the 2020 season, Mike Ahern from Limerick. So I'm delighted to be joined by Mike Ahern once again on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We're going to discuss the ongoing situation with regards to senior football in Limerick. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Kieran.
So, Mike, you have the honour of being the first man interviewed for the return of Between the Stripes, but I suppose not a lot has really happened in Limerick since we last spoke to you. It's not as if there's been investigations or point deductions or two Limerick clubs emerging in the League of Ireland, possibly. What's going on at Limerick at the moment? What is the latest? I suppose we'll start perhaps with the recent name change for Limerick United to Treaty United.
Yeah, well, I suppose your guess is as good as mine, Kieran, as to what's going on down here, because it depends who you listen to, what kind of stories or what progress is being made. But I suppose even more developments in the weekend just gone by, when it was announced that the newly formed Limerick United were going to have to rebrand within a month of having a big PR event to launch their new club. That was simply because former Limerick FC chairman Pat O'Sullivan, who is, I suppose, still current chairman by name only, because Limerick FC don't exactly have a licence or a team at the moment, even though that is pending an FAI decision on the licence approval. But Pat O'Sullivan had made Limerick United aware that he patented the naming rights to Limerick United Limited many years ago, and he in fact sent them legal correspondence in the last 7 days to warn them that if they were to progress with the name, that he would be forced into taking further legal action. That forced the interim chairman of the newly formed Limerick United, Con Murray, into arranging a very quick meeting last Thursday evening with his new board and committee. And even though it was discussed that they might pull the plug altogether on entering the League of Ireland, it is now apparent that that won't be the case, and instead they opted for a rebranding to Treaty United. And I'm sure, as you know, Kieran, any name that doesn't contain where you're actually from, i.e. Limerick, it's going to cause a bit of controversy, and the naming has not gone down well. But Con Murray was on local radio during the weekend confirming that they really don't have an option on this one. They put their hand up. It's a PR disaster, but it's one that they hope to rectify in time. But just for now, to ensure that they can compete in the leagues, which start in a couple of weeks, they'll go with Treaty United.
Yeah, as you said, a PR disaster to get Limerick United, or Treaty United as they're now known, up and running. But in terms of getting the teams together, underage teams together for the upcoming League of Ireland underage seasons, did he give any indication on how that's coming together?
Yeah, well, I think, look, they were pretty proactive. As soon as they had their launch for Limerick United, they did send out straight away media notifications regarding player assessment and player trials, which went ahead at the University of Limerick. And they were quite well attended, and they have managed to muster together the players required to start their respective leagues under 13, 15, 17, 19s. The women's structure was strong in Limerick last year, and with most of the committee remaining in place there, they will have no problem fielding the women's national league side and the under 17 women's side. So I think from that point of view, there certainly has been interest in playing for the club. Of course, lots of kids aspire to playing in the National League, and that is the major selling point that Treaty United have had in the past couple of months. A lot of local clubs will be losing some of their up-and-coming talent, but Con Murray again said that they'll be sitting down with the clubs to plan the best way forward in players joining Limerick United, or Treaty United as now known, and also the pathway back to schoolboy soccer should they revert back from playing in the National League. But again, like I said, there was a lot of speculation over the weekend that this mightn't even happen, but it looks like it's all systems go, that they will partake in the underage leagues. The big question now, Kieran, is will Pat O'Sullivan, Limerick FC, get a licence to play in the First Division when they don't have a manager, a team, or even a home base?
Yeah, I suppose we'll move on and discuss that next. But just going back to what you've been saying there about Treaty United, I suppose that's not a unique issue to Limerick in terms of that clashing of heads between the senior side in the county and the junior club. So that's certainly not something unique to Limerick. And obviously junior football very strong in the region as well. So no surprise to see that being an issue for the club. But good to hear that they're working on that at the moment. Let's talk about Limerick FC. I was at the press conference the other day for the All-Ireland League, and I see Pat O'Sullivan himself. He was there. He was present. And he's been very active over the last couple of weeks attending meetings like that, and he's been in the news, of course, with everything that's going on with Limerick FC. No manager, no team. What's the latest there, Mike?
Well, the latest is that we know Pat O'Sullivan is applying for a licence, and he is doing a huge amount of work in the background. Let's not forget, he's perfectly entitled to be doing what he's doing, Kieran, and a lot of people might have notions about what has happened in the last number of years with the basic collapse of Limerick FC. But Pat O'Sullivan recognised very quickly in the process that the FAI had broken their own rules. And how often have we heard that across any stream of soccer in the Republic of Ireland? But the FAI simply never offered Limerick the opportunity to apply for a licence, which was contravening their own rules of the league. So that's really where Pat O'Sullivan has the FAI by the lero, I suppose, because, you know, they've broken their own rules, and he's entitled now to at least have an application processed by the FAI. Many people will tell you there isn't the hope of him getting it, but from what I believe, a lot of the debts that were accrued aren't footballing debts. That's one of the only reasons that the FAI could deny Pat O'Sullivan a licence. But really, when you think about it, if he did get a licence, with the First Division Shield expected to start in, what, less than 2 weeks, or just over 2 weeks now, there are no players at the moment. There are no underage teams. There's nothing to even feed into a senior club in Limerick at the moment. So it would be very, very hard to see where he would be going with that, how quickly he could conjure something together. A lot of the players who would have played over the last number of years have all found new clubs. The likes of Shane Tracy has signed for Aisling Anacotti locally, Colm Walsh O'Loughlin has gone to Pike Rovers, Clyde O'Connell has gone to Fairview Rangers, and then you've got a whole plethora of players now playing with Galway United for the forthcoming season, the likes of Killian Bruder, Jack Lynch, Shane Duggan. You know, the Limerick players are spread all over the country, so I don't think it would be possible to get anything resembling a competitive team on the pitch in the next couple of weeks. But look, like I said, Pat O'Sullivan is perfectly entitled to take the action that he's taken. It'll be up to the responsible authorities now to deal with that application. And let's see, we're all waiting with bated breath the outcome of that decision.
Yeah, and as you said, we're only about 2.5 weeks away from the start of the First Division season. We still don't know whether it's going to be the Shield competition the teams go straight into, or whether they're going to go back to the original fixture list that came out. Are the clubs going to play Shamrock Rovers B? Are they going to boycott those games? There's so many question marks up in the air at the moment. Myself and John, obviously, will be discussing that on tonight's show. Just in regards to Tommy Barrett, have you spoken to Tommy since the end of the League of Ireland season? What's his situation? Is there any possibility he could be, once again, the manager of a Limerick FC side if they were to somehow get a licence?
Yeah, well, Tommy's contract expired at the end of the season, and Tommy would be another person, I suppose, who has clung in there in all adversity against the odds to see last season through. But I can tell you he is the academy director and the head of football at Treaty United, so there's absolutely no chance that he will revert and become manager of Limerick FC if they were to have a team. Of course, Treaty United have always looked at applying for a senior men's licence next year, and that was the attraction, I think, for Tommy, in that he could continue to work with the underage sides for this year from an academy grassroots point of view. And then obviously if the team and club did put in a men's senior team next year, by default almost he would be overseeing and manager of that team. So it's more long-term planning by Tommy Barrett in that respect. And I think even if Pat O'Sullivan got a licence, I think that boat has well and truly sailed from Tommy's point of view. But look, never say never in football. The one thing that is for sure is Tommy's time and commitment is very much now with Treaty United.
And a final question. One thing you didn't raise is the in regards to if Limerick FC are applying for a licence. As you said, they've currently no players on their books. They've no manager. Do they have a stadium to play in?
Well, my understanding is no. I do know for a fact that Pat O'Sullivan approached the Limerick District Management Committee, which of course oversee the junior game in the city in Limerick last Tuesday week. He attended their weekly meeting to look at the facility at Jackman Park. I mean, not many supporters from around the country will have fond memories of coming down to Jackman Park in years gone by. It's a stadium that isn't really fit for hosting League of Ireland football as of yet. They could do it massive development works, very small stand at the ground, and you've got an embankment where supporters are forced to look down onto the pitch. It's not very comfortable. The playing surface itself, I mean, it'll be used quite a lot in the coming months with a number of cup finals all penciled in for Jackman Park. So look, as far as I'm concerned, no dealings have been done as of yet. Treaty United, however, they've been proactive again. They've approached the Marketfield Stadium, and they'll use the Markets Field for many of their games. Of course, they're training at the University of Limerick as well, so it looks like they'll have first divvy on the facilities, and Limerick FC could be searching for a home. It really is just a mess of a situation when you consider no team, no manager, no home ground, and how somebody could be expected to conjure all that up in the space of a couple of weeks. It really mind boggles me, for one, and I'm sure the rest of the country are looking on going, what the hell is happening in Limerick?
Yeah, well, I have to say, Mike, I thought by getting you on the show you might be able to clear some things up for us, but I'm more confused than ever after speaking to you. Thanks for your time again. A final question, I suppose, what's the feeling of the supporters down in Limerick at the moment? If Limerick FC were to somehow get a licence and start out this League of Ireland season, do you feel they'd be backed by the people of Limerick, or has there been too many bridges burnt now at this stage?
Yeah, look, I think too much water has flown under the bridge. Crowds have steadily dwindled and declined over the last 18 months. We were more or less back to the core support of around 350, 400 by the end of Limerick FC's first division campaign last year. And as you mentioned at the top of your programme, you know, the 26-point deduction saw them finish bottom of the table. And in recent days, the match-fixing allegations have resurfaced across the city. So there's a lot of people very, very disillusioned. On the other hand, you look at the Pike Rovers Sports Ground yesterday, the two big junior sides in Limerick meeting in the FAI Junior Cup. The ground, I won't say was absolutely packed, but there was a huge crowd at it. So the appetite for football certainly remains in Limerick, but only if it's run in a proper manner. And I think certainly with Limerick FC in the past 18 months or so, people are very, very disillusioned. The trust and confidence has dwindled to an all-time low. And I'm not too sure, Kieran, if many of those supporters will be seen on the terraces or even putting their hands in their pocket to support a senior soccer side at the moment. But in Limerick, one thing is guaranteed. If any side is successful, it'll garner support very quickly, and that will be the idea of whoever runs a senior soccer club in Limerick, is to be successful on the pitch, and I think the crowds will look after themselves. But for now, I would say trust and public confidence is at an all-time low in senior soccer.
Yeah, and I think that's the sad thing about all this, Mike. There's huge potential there for Limerick, no doubt about it, but it's just a very, very sorry and messy situation at the moment. Mike, thanks very much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again throughout the year.
Thanks, Kieran. Best of luck.
Thanks very much, Mike.
So, it's a shame that we started off with such a story like that, but I suppose in one way it wouldn't be the greatest league in the world if we didn't have stories like that. And also, it'd be a lot shorter with our podcast.
Yeah, I suppose to recap there on what we've spoken with Mike, it's just a massive, there's such potential in Limerick, and you have this mess. And I mean, 30 years ago there was a situation in Limerick where there was two clubs in the county vying for a place in the League of Ireland. It's absolutely unbelievable to think we're back in that type of situation now. And I suppose all we can say is we just hope it's sorted soon, and there's going to be some clarity for the other teams in the First Division. Let's move on and talk about the First Division as a whole at the moment, John. Two sets of fixture lists out. We're about 2.5 weeks away from the start of the season, and we do not know who we're playing in the first game of the season. We don't know whether we're going straight into a league campaign, into a Shield campaign, where nobody seems to know what the point of the Shield is, whether there's an actual sporting prize at the end of it. Is there any prize money involved?
Is it not Champions League qualification?
Oh, what have you made of the whole situation? And obviously, the Shamrock Rovers be on top of this.
I can't think of any other league where there'd be such a shambles as this. Mm. And, you know, I would watch, I'd cover a lot of football and watch a lot and read a lot about various foreign leagues. But I've never seen anything like this, where they've had about two or three goes at getting the fixtures right. And at this stage, we're still not sure what teams are going to be in it, what the league's going to look like, whether the Shield's going to go ahead. It's just an almighty mess.
My biggest problem with this is potentially putting clubs in serious financial jeopardy. The clubs have as far as their budgets are set for the season ahead. As far as they're concerned, they're playing a 10-team league or a 9-team league because they don't want Shamrock Rovers be in it. So they've already budgeted for a certain number of games. Now they're told there's the possibility of this Shield competition where, let's be honest, nobody is going to go out and watch this. No one will have any interest in watching a Shield competition. The first league game as such will nearly not be until April. By the time that comes around, the interest will have long waned away. Attendances are going to be massively down. Clubs have budgeted for a certain amount of home games. We're told with the Shield campaign there's only going to be... It's a massively reduced amount of league games. I think it's only 20... Is it 20 league games?
Something like that.
Something very small. Then you have your Shield games on top of that. But in terms of league games itself, 20 games. That's not enough. Clubs have budgeted for a proper league season, 27, as they're used to.
Yeah.
This is absolutely catastrophic.
Rovers have created a B team as well for this league as well. They're probably players that they would have made decisions on that might be on the verge of the first team squad. I'm thinking of like Dean Williams from last season. He was out on loan. You know, they might have retained him on a basis of playing this. And, you know, if Rovers B teams get thrown out, you know, what are players like that going to end up doing? And
Can I get your view on the Rovers B situation? Because I would be very much in the minority in terms of a First Division fan. I would much prefer to have Shamrock Rovers B in there and have a 10-team league. And, you know, the odd trip to Tala here and there is nice, even if you're playing in front of a very small crowd. But I would much prefer that than a 9-team league where there's a bye week every week for teams. Because then again, that adds financial pressures to a club. Let's say, for example, Longford Town, they play 2 away games in a row. And next thing, it's their bye week. That's 3 weeks without gate receipts.
Yeah.
So already there you have a problem.
I'm not a massive fan of it, I'll be brutally honest. I'd rather see a proper reserve or an underage league where there is potential to play some overage players.
Oh yeah, so would I. But in terms of, would you rather a 9-team league? Would you rather Shamrock Rovers be or level it up at 10 apiece? Where do you stand?
I think I'd rather see play more different teams. I just think, you know, if it's a 9-team league, it's going to get more... It's going to be too samey, but, you know, 9-team, 10-team, there's not much difference. I'd have loved to have seen the First Division with teams from Kerry and maybe Mayo and all of, you know, open it up
Can
a bit
you
more.
Imagine clubs that might have any interest in, as you mentioned, Kerry is a region we're always told there could be a possibility there. Mayo as well have underage teams. Cavan Monaghan have an underage setup. They're looking in at this at the moment. Surely they're thinking, why would we get involved with this absolute basket case?
Yeah, I know. And it is that. It's crazy. And I just don't know where to go on it because it's such a mess. And it wouldn't surprise me if we had one or two more sets of fixtures out and the Shield disappeared before the season started. It's just a mess, Kim.
Yeah. You've called it a shambles. Longford Town boss Dara Doyle called it that last night when I spoke to him after the match. So we're going to bring you our interview now with Dara Doyle. I spoke to him after Longford Town's pre-season win against Dundalk last night. So I'm here on the pitch at Oriel Park after Longford Town's pre-season win over the League of Ireland champions Dundalk, and I'm joined by Longford Town boss Dara Doyle. Dara, fantastic performance aside from the result, which obviously great to get the scalp of a Premier Division team, especially the size of Dundalk in pre-season, but the performance itself I'd imagine really pleased you.
Yeah, no, it was. I think we performed tonight, and that's the important thing in pre-season, that we do that. The work rate and the discipline from the lads on the pitch was top notch there tonight, and we played some really good football, but what we also did, we worked really, really hard for each other to try and make it as difficult as possible for Dundalk to play. I think you could see that for anyone that was here tonight. They did struggle to break us down at times. We had a really good shape about us. We worked hard. We played well. And listen, I'm delighted to come out of a place like this with a win tonight. It's great for the lads. And listen, I've said it to them there. It's a great performance, but we just need to keep going and keep going. And
pre-season seems to be going really smoothly for you so far. I was at the first game against Bowes. I think that was more of just getting the rust off the players mostly. You gave plenty of players a run out. You used, I think, something like 20 plus players in the game. Against Shells then, you could really see on the ball there was more of an emphasis on keeping possession. And again tonight, it's come on another level again. So you must be really happy with how things are progressing.
Yeah, we are. I think, like you say, that was our first pre-season game. We were only back, I think, maybe 10 days just over that when we played the Bowes game. And that's one of those where you are giving everyone minutes. You're making a number of changes at half. time, and as it goes, we made other changes in the second game, and obviously we played Finn Harps again, and then again tonight. You can see that obviously we're getting a little bit closer to the season, so there wasn't as many halftime changes tonight, so you were trying to get a few more minutes in lads' legs. But no, listen, we've been working gradually through pre-season, working on blocks and blocks of how we want to play with the ball and exactly what we want to do without the ball. And I mean, the lads are listening, they're taking all that in, and they're doing what I'm asking them to do on the pitch. And listen, it's a pleasure to watch from the side, and with the work rate they're willing to do all of that, listen, good things will happen, and we expect results when that happens.
Is the final piece of the jigsaw the finishing? There was a lot of chances there tonight you didn't take. I think against Shells, dominated the ball for long, long spells, didn't score. Is that the final piece of the jigsaw now?
Yeah, I personally think we have that. I know in them couple of games we maybe didn't finish. I think Aaron McCabe has a good chance tonight as well. They had up front as well with Rob Manley, probably had one or two chances where he could have taken a shot with his left. But listen, we signed Rob Manley, who was top goal scorer in the league last year. James English, who also was a noted goal scorer. Dean Bourne would become good with his goals. Yeah. Sam Verdon's always good. So we've got goals in this team, but what we also have is what I feel a good defensive base to build our game on. With what we've added and what we have, I don't think it'll be an issue for us this year with the chances that we'll create. I think this will be the year that we will have a centre forward that scores a number of goals for the club.
Yeah, and just speaking about Rob Manley, obviously big name player coming in, as you said, top scorer in the division last year. There's going to be a lot of attention on him. I think he's been making some fantastic runs in pre-season. He looks like he's holding the ball up really well. He hasn't scored yet. You'd probably love him to get one maybe at the weekend against Cork, just to get him up and running.
Yeah, no, listen, it is. And like strikers will say, they always thrive and getting a few goals. It gives them confidence going on. But listen, we're really pleased with how Rob has done. He's done really well since he's come in. His work rate, his ethos in the group, and he knows what we want to do and how hard you have to work to get what we want. He's prepared to do that. He is a goal scorer. You see it in training all the time. He's hungry to score goals. I'm sure, like I say, it'll happen for him, and if he can get one at the weekend to get the ball rolling for that, that'll be great. But I've plenty of confidence in him, and he knows how happy we are with him since he's come in. And like you say, with the runs he makes and how he occupies two centre-backs out of possession, he's going to be a big player for us.
And at the other end of the pitch, your second choice keeper come on tonight, and he's made three or four fantastic saves. Yeah, so you must be delighted with that.
Yeah, no, listen, he's done that as well. We've had Luke at the club for he came in through last season, and he's an outstanding shot stopper, really, really good. And you've seen one-on-one saves he made. I see him do it week in, week out in training, and I'm delighted with Luke to come in. And listen, he'll be challenging Lee, and it'll be up to the two of them to fight it out for the number one position for the season.
And look, finally, I'm not going to try and corn you into any political debates here, but we're what, 2.5 weeks away from the start of the first division season. I think supporters would say they're still not clear over who Longford are going to play in that first game of the season. Is that difficult on your end, or is it just for you getting the players right and ready for whoever you might face in that first game?
Yeah, it is. It's getting the players right for the game. As far as we're concerned, we're playing the first weekend, and that weekend on Friday or Saturday, the 21st or 22nd. So we'll be ready to play who we have to play on that day. It is a distraction, regardless of what you say. Players don't care once they're playing games, but at the minute, we don't know who we're playing. It's a shambles from the FAI. The way they've brought out the second set of fixtures was a farce. No detail, no explanation on anything.
Have you heard when you might hear some word? Because there was reports online a couple of days ago, there was going to be some clarity in the next couple of days over licensing of certain clubs. We're closer now, again now to the season. We still don't know more.
Yeah, no, listen, it is the case. I don't have a clue. I know the licensing date is the 6th, which is Thursday, so right. I'd expect some news after the licensing is held on Thursday, and something should come out, and it should be done very soon and very quickly, because decisions have to be made. They need to show the players, the staff, the supporters, the clubs some respect, and I feel that's sadly lacking at the moment with the lack of information, the lack of progress, and everything seems to be in there. It's not great in that point, but from the players' point of view, they are a focus group, and they'll be ready to come the start date. Whoever we're playing or whatever fixture we're playing, we'll be ready.
And final question, Niall Barnes, he's signed on the dotted line now. McNally as well from Dundalk, he's officially confirmed his deal. Are you done now with the transfer?
Yeah, we are. We're delighted to add the two of them. We'd identified Niall Barnes before the end of last season. So he was a player that we'd spoken to throughout the off season. Obviously, he finished playing a couple of games with Bluebell in January, and we were delighted to bring him in. So he's a big asset. You can see from the couple of games he's come in and played. He's got pace. He can get at players. He's willing to work, which is a massive thing as part of our group. And we're delighted to get him. Aaron McNally's another one who came from the 19s here at Dundalk. And listen, he's been excellent since he's come in. He was one player recommended to us. Brought him in and had a look at him in December, and he was, listen, you could see his quality there. So we were delighted to get that one done as well. So we've brought two of the 19s up to the first team squad in Callum Warfield and Thomas McLaughlin, and the two of them will add to the squad, which will bring us up to, I think, 25 in total. And listen, I'm really happy with them numbers and the bodies and the players that we have.
Dara, brilliant, thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
So that was the thoughts of Longford Town boss Darragh Doyle after their win over Dundalk last night. We will be speaking about the First Division a little bit more towards the end of the show and previewing how each club is shaping up ahead of the new campaign. John, let it be the Shield or the League or whatever they're going to play in, but we'll talk about how the squads are coming together. But we'll start with the Premier Division, and I think we'll start with Dundalk because obviously I was at that game last night. I was also at their game against Crusaders on Monday night, and I've seen them in action against Drogheda and UCD, so I've seen quite a bit of Dundalk in the last couple of weeks. What's your thoughts on how the squad has shaped up in terms of transfers?
Couple of experienced heads, and yeah, I was a bit surprised to see Jamie McGrath go as well, because I thought he had a really good season last season. Also, a little bit of a breakthrough.
Yeah, I thought he had a fantastic campaign last year. What do you make of that move? Do you feel moving to St Mirren is a step up? Is it a step down?
I think at the moment, the way we rate the... Our top division and the likes of the Scottish teams, it's probably a bit of a sideways step, I would say.
He's not going to play European football with St Mirren.
He's not, exactly. And, which is,
I've watched quite a lot of Scottish football, having been back and forth there over the last couple of years, and I've watched your Celtic, and I've watched your Hibs, and then I've watched your Alloa and your Falkirk, so I've watched quite a mixed level of football. It's a very, very physical league. It's a very direct league. I would have doubts over whether that is the right move for Jamie McGrath. He's a very technical player. I think he's not going to see a lot of the ball with St Mirren. They're going to be on the back foot against the bigger sides in that league. I'm not sure that was the best move for him.
Only time will tell. And the other one I was surprised to see go out, although he didn't have a great season last season, but I'm thinking back to that blockbuster goal in Europe, Robbie Benson.
Yeah, to be honest, there was a lot of talk among supporters of Dundalk last year that Benson might hang up the boots altogether. Obviously, he had that very bad injury towards the start of last year. And he has a great career outside of football. But no doubt, he's a hugely talented player. And when it became clear he was going to be leaving Dundalk, in the last couple of games of last year, the old Benson came back. He was brilliant in them United Cup games against Linfield. So I think that's a great sign for Pats, especially with Stephen O'Donnell being the boss there. If he can get any sort of a tune out of Benson at all, they have made a fantastic signing there.
Let's talk about the ins then. So a couple of decent signs. Greg Sloggett, he's a good player.
Caught the eye for me in pre-season. I think last season, obviously when Shields was missing in the cup final, it was a huge blow. I think Sloggett and Shields together, there's real steel in that midfield. He's very good on the ball, very strong, has vision for a pass, but he can look after the ball and do the defensive work as well. I think that's a really good sign. I think he's one to watch this year.
Ex-Scotland under 21 player Cammy Smith joined from Dundee United. I don't know too much about him, Kieran.
Yeah,
you've seen him.
He made his debut the other night against Crusaders, played 45 minutes. He looks very tidy on the ball. I would rate him more as a number 10 than an out-and-out striker. He also scored last night against Longford, was disallowed. It hit his hand just before it went into the net, but he took it well, so he knows his way to goal. He has quite a good goal record, and I think that's a clever signing from Dundalk.
And finally, a new signing today just been announced. They've signed Stefan Kolovic. He's a winger from Serbia. Now, it looks like a little bit of a journeyman to me, although he's only 25, Kieran. He's had a few teams in the top flight in Serbia. But he's certainly got a great pedigree. He started in the youth teams at Red Star Belgrade. Now, you're too young to remember them as an absolute European powerhouse, but they had great teams in the past. And he was actually on the books of Atletico Madrid at one stage as a youth player. So, look, he's got a bit of background there. So it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to life in Dundalk.
Yeah, well, I seem to remember Athlone Town having a player. I remember Felix last year, who was with Real Madrid
and Atletico Madrid as a youngster.
So that's no guarantee for success, but... has a decent goal record from what I've been reading. He can play anywhere across the front three, I'm told, but he's predominantly a winger. So it's come out of absolutely nowhere, that signing. There was no mention of this last night. It's come out of the blue. So very, very interesting. But it's clear Dundalk, there was a lot of talk last year in the European games. The squads they were going up against, there was always a spread of players from different countries. I think for Dundalk to take that next step forward in Europe, these are the type of signings they have to make. Obviously, he has to be a good player and he has to do the job for them. We'll see how he does. But if he does make any type of an impact at Dundalk, don't be surprised if you see more of these type of transfers over the next couple of years.
Yep. Keep an eye on Tinder just to see if they bring in anybody else.
yeah, that was a highlight of pre-season. But overall, stronger or weaker than last season, or much the same?
I don't know, Kieran. I think they're much the same. I think the re-sign of Patrick Hooman, absolutely critical to them, because everything goes through him. We'll see.
I think Shamrock Rovers had a small feeling that Hoban wasn't going to re-sign that contract, and they probably thought there was a chance there, because I think that's literally all Shamrock Rovers are missing at the moment. They are a striker away from being very, very, very close.
We'll talk about Rovers, but we'll hear your interview first, Kieran, shall we?
Vinnie Perth?
Yep.
Yeah, let's get Vinnie on the show now. I spoke to him last night after the game against Longford Town. I think it's fair to say a disappointing performance from Dundalk, but overall, Vinnie Perth feels it's been a good pre-season campaign so far.
I'm here with Dundalk boss Vinnie Perth after their defeat to Longford Town in pre-season. Vinnie, how do you feel the pre-season's coming so far? You had a game last night, game tonight, plenty of minutes for the players ahead of the President's Cup on Sunday.
Yeah, I suppose we're really, really happy how it went. Obviously the last sort of there tonight it went a little bit stale on us at the end. We did expect that. It's been gruesome for the players, and we've pushed them a little bit more this year than we probably have over the last few years. And we, you know, we did a tough training session yesterday, and it probably showed a little bit on the pitch. But at the same time, I thought Longford were very, very good at times tonight. Bar that first 20 minutes, we were very, very good. And then, to be fair to them, they were very dangerous on the counter attack. But in terms of us, really, really happy what we've done. The squad has gelled together really well, and I think we're in a very, very strong position.
Yeah, and you're still bedding in new players, of course. Cammy Smith played a half last night, played a half tonight. How far away is he in terms of minutes, and overall how far away are you from having your finished product now ahead of the start of the season?
Yeah, I suppose, look, we Cammy Smith, if you look at our front four today, like, they all needed probably a bit of game time. Patrick's been nursing a bit of injury, which comes in pre-season. Josh on the right and Cammy on the left, so that meant we were a little, that's not us at our very best, and Cammy's probably best as a 10, but we wanted him to, you know, get used to playing with our players and being ready for ultimately the next couple of weeks of big games for us, so that's what benefit to him. So we're very close. Like, we've had some unbelievable performances in pre-season, and I, as I said, I'm filled with confidence after the way pre-season has gone. A couple of guys will be a bit down after tonight, but in many ways that's not a bad thing.
Jordan Flores, very bad clash of knees last night in the game, and Sean Murray as well, nursing a bit of a knock at times during the game. Any update on those players?
You get injuries in pre-season. Jordan Flores is fine, he trained today. As I said, we're in training mode at the moment, so Jordan trained today, not a problem. He's available for the weekend. Sean is coming back from, you know, a lot of injuries last season. We rested him down, so it's going to take a while for him to get up to speed. But you know, only really Will Patchen was the only one that probably couldn't play if we had a game. And he's trained today after a shoulder injury against Cluj. So everyone has been pushed very hard, a lot of sore bodies now, so it's about sort of relax.
Very much all systems go for Sunday then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sunday's a Sunday. As much as we look at Sunday thinking it's a friendly, and, or, you know, but it won't be come Sunday, so both teams will have a right go off it. And again, once we're ready for Derry the following Friday, that's where it all matters. So we'll be ready.
Is there that bit more emphasis though on Sunday after what happened in the cup final, and you'd like to get that early marker down, or for you is it really about just getting ready for Derry now?
It's all about getting ready for Derry. I mean, we all start on 0 points. We're not behind anyone, not ahead of anyone next Friday against and Derry, and that's ultimately what matters. So people will overanalyse and underanalyse as they normally do, and you know, I'm sure if we win 3-0, social media go bananas, and if Rovers win 3-0, social media go bananas. But I think both managers will dust themselves down and get ready for the league on the Friday. That's ultimately what matters.
Vinny, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Yeah, I never tend to read too much into pre-season results, but, you know, a superb win for Longford Town there against Dundalk. But, you know, it's to me, pre-season, and any manager is going to say, it's just all about fitness. But make no doubt about it, they'll be wanting to make an impact in Europe this season, will Dundalk?
100%.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the other teams and the transfers abroad. And we'll have a look at the what predictions we think and how well they're going to do. So team that I think have recruited quite well is Bohemians, Kieran.
Yeah, well, one that straight off the bat that we know quite well, Anto Breslin with Longford last season. Obviously, Bose have lost Darragh Leahy. He looks a great signer for Dundalk, but they've got a ready-made replacement here. Anto Breslin might take him a little bit of time just to get used to Premier Division football, but we seen him last year. He was far, far too good for the First Division. I think that's a brilliant signing by Bose.
Yeah, he was a super sign in the first place from Fenn, was Breslin. And he had a great season. And, you know, I'm not surprised that he's gone to a top division club.
That's
and,
the last time I want to hear you praising Neil Fenn on this podcast, John.
Oh, are you still bitter?
Oh, bitter as a lemon.
We've got a better manager now.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about Neil Fenn later and his signings, so don't worry about that. And there won't be too much praise, Kieran, so you need rest easy. They brought Stephen McGuinness in as well. I think he's a class keeper.
Yeah, he's not going to see a lot of game time, let's be honest. They have James Talbot there, but a very, very good backup. Always important to have that. The one that really stands out for me is Chris Twardek.
Yeah, he had a decent season for Sligo last season. Sligo will really miss him. They're gonna struggle this season, I'm telling you now, with some of the players that have departed.
I think they'll be on a fairly similar level to where they were last year, but they really need a striker. Of course, Mikey Drennan has left now, and Liam Buckley's come out and he said they are looking absolutely everywhere, even outside of Europe, for a striker. And at the moment, they're not finding one.
Let's talk about Shells, Kieran. You're obviously newly promoted, bit of money to spend, and I'd say they've spent a lot of it on the wages of Carl Shepherd.
I'm not so sure on that, John. I think Carl Shepherd, he's obviously highlighted his own fitness and health issues he has. And that's definitely played a part in his form going down in recent years. But look, they've signed with plenty of experience here. Gary Deegan coming back from England, he's had his own fitness issues. I was at the Longford Shells game a couple of weeks ago in the AUL. I was concerned by what I seen by Shelburne. They were very, very defensive on the night. Obviously, you said yourself you can't read too much into pre-season games, but they didn't show an awful lot on the ball. Their centre midfield partnership was Deegan and Poynton. It didn't look very mobile, I have to say. They've brought Daniel O'Reilly in from Finn Harps. That looks a very good signing. We'll have to wait and see what type of Carl Shepherd they get, whether it's the Shepherd that was absolutely unplayable at times with Cork or whether it was the Shepherd towards the end of his spell there. They've brought in Aaron Dobbs from Longford as well, and I don't think either of us would be too impressed by that signing.
I was surprised with that one, just to say the least.
Yeah, and Jack Brady, obviously, he's come in there, and I think he'll get that number one shirt quite quickly. Yeah. Brilliant goal.
He's a good keeper. We've seen him at Longford, and he was the standout at Limerick last season in that side. That's a good signing.
And obviously they've retained Kieran Kilduff. That's the big one. He knows where the net is. They've kept the likes of Luke Byrne, Jeze Kabia, Fernandez, the two lads that came in from Cove. They did very well towards the end of last year. Out went Conan Byrne. Look, he was in and out of the team with injuries towards the end there. Obviously, sad to see him go, given his connection with Shells, but I don't think they'll miss him too much.
Will they stay up, Kieran?
Yes, they will stay up. To be honest, I hate to say it because, you know, we love this league, but last year I felt the quality of the league outside of the top two was quite poor. You had your the best of the rest was Derry and Bowes, and after that it was quite poor. I think Shells won't have to do an awful lot to stay up in the division. But looking at the signings they made, I don't think they're going to... They won't be much higher than mid-table, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, Rovers will want to go one better than last season, won't they? And to me, they've done great business in keeping the squad settled. There's not much... They've not lost much.
Look, they've kept Jack Byrne.
Yeah, and they've kept Jack Byrne.
Yeah.
The addition of Liam Scales, to me, real good signing for that.
Yeah, good signing there. We don't know a lot about Reece Marshall, I suppose. Looking at players that have gone out, they won't really miss any of those, will they? Ethan Boyle's gone to Linfield, and they are... I've been talking to a couple of Linfield fans. I actually work at one, and they're not impressed with Boyle at all. No. Cummins, he didn't catch fire at all after signing from Cork. And Voyage was... he was the striker they brought in last year from abroad. As we said, they're really trying hard to find a striker. Rovers, they still haven't managed. Ardesh, would you agree that they're a striker short at the moment?
They're going to have the same problem as last season, aren't they? We were saying it all season that they needed a striker, and they had Voyage, they had Cummins, but they needed something else.
I'm just looking at their re-signings there. One name that wouldn't have been on that sheet last year is Dean Williams, and we know what he'd done in the first division when he was sent out on loan. Can he be the man? Does he deserve his chance at the very least?
I like Williams, I have to say, and I know I was talking to... I'm going to mention the name again, Mr. Neil Fenn. Neil Fenn. I'll not say it too loud. About I think I mentioned it 100 times when we were having a night out in the pub about signing him, and he didn't. He went on loan elsewhere.
To Bray.
He did very well. I think he's more re-signed for the B team, but if he gets his chance, I don't think is he good enough? No. They're going to want somebody else bringing in. He's decent, but whether he's top of that first division,
I haven't seen Rovers in pre-season, admittedly, but I'm told he's done quite well. We'll know more on Sunday, won't we? If he starts in the President's Cup, I think that's a big vote of confidence for the young lad. And if he can do well in that game and start their first league game,
don't forget they've got Graham Burke as well. They're going to get a full season out of Graham Burke as well, which they didn't have. So
they'll get at least half a season. He's there till the summer, but it wouldn't surprise me if he stays for the full season. That's a big bonus himself. And Jack Byrne ran the cup final really, but I just feel they're a striker short at the moment. But Dean Williams for me deserves a chance.
Yeah, well, look, are they going to be reliant on Aaron Green again up front, or you know, will it be Williams? I'm not sure.
I just don't think Green, he did well last season, but I could highlight numerous chances that he missed where you look at a Hope and he's not going to miss them chances. I think that's the difference at the moment. There won't be a lot between Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers for me, but at the moment, Dundalk, if they were to lose Hope, they have Georgie Kelly sitting on the bench.
We always talk about Derry and we always think, are they going to be up there this year? And have they brought the right people in? They're going to miss Junior for a start, Kieran.
Oh, what a loss. We had him on the show last year and straight away, just an infectious character. And when you watch him play then as well, he just such a real flair footballer, scored plenty of goals for him. I really, really liked him. I was hoping he'd stick around, but unfortunately they've lost him.
He's great fun to interview as well.
Yeah, so he was a brilliant guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So unfortunately he's gone. They brought a couple of players from foreign fields, which would be interesting. And, I suppose, raise my eyebrows to sign a Connor Clifford. I'm not 100% convinced.
I think he'll do a job for them. I think he's quite a steady player. He's not really a goal scoring midfielder, but he's quite good on the ball. I think that's an okay sign. And they've lost Slogger, of course.
Yeah.
So he kind of fits into the same bracket. He's a player that'll keep the ball, he'll recycle possession quite well. I think that's a clever signing from Declan Devine.
They brought a couple of loan players in from the likes of Sheffield United and Hull, and a couple of more foreign signings from Tim Nielsen and Bakayoko from FC Chirac. I know very little about them. It'd be interesting to see.
Nielsen has a very, very good goal record, and he got a couple against Finn Harps in a pre-season friendly. He was down as one of these trialist ABC,
but
he did score in that game.
They always have great pre-seasons, though, trialists.
They never deliver when the real season comes around. Yeah. But no, he got a goal in that one. He was impressive. So that looks a very interesting sign. And Derry are always a club. They always find these interesting players from overseas, and it'd be great to see a striker come into the league and get 10 or 15 goals. It's just good for the league.
I'd be thinking European places for Derry.
Yeah. They've had an increase in budget as well, so there is a few more pounds there for Declan Devine to spend. Okay. Again, I don't think they're going to be near the top two, but as you said, they should be in the top three or four.
Now, Sligo. Now, I think they're going to struggle this season. Who do we talk about when we talked about Sligo last season? We talked about Twardek.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about your mate, Big Dante.
Yes, yes.
And Romeo Parks. They've all gone, Kieran.
Yeah, huge losses. Dante Levrock, you'll remember, John, the very first show of last season.
Yeah.
I came on here, I slated him after his debut in Oriel Park. I thought he was the worst centre-half I'd ever seen. He recovered so well from that. He became an absolutely crucial part of that team. He is
a
huge loss.
And a BTS legend.
Yeah.
We loved him.
Yeah. Huge loss for them. Romeo Parks as well, not the best finisher in the world. He missed some really good chances, but he scored plenty of goals at the same time as well. He had that just bit of spark up front, bit of pace about him. He was a focal point for them. As I mentioned a little bit earlier on, they're in big trouble if they can't find a striker. If they get a striker in, look, you've mentioned the players they've lost there, they're probably going to be in the lower half of the table, but I don't think they'll be in relegation trouble.
They've brought in this signing from Finland, Teemu. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his surname, Kieran, because I haven't rehearsed it, but I just think they're going to miss Twardek's creativity and, the likes of Parks up front. I think it could be a season of struggle.
Yeah. Maybe I need to reevaluate that. Maybe they could be in trouble, Sligo. You do make a good point. They've lost a crucial centre-half. They've lost a midfield player and they've lost a striker. They've lost their spine of their team, really, those three players. So,
and it would have been, like I said, the three players that we would have talked about a lot last season.
Yeah, so that is worrying, all right. We'll move on to Finn Harps.
Yeah, they've brought in a couple of signings that sort of raise my eyebrow. Ryan Connolly, it's good to see him back.
I'm surprised by this signing. Am. Yeah, was very, very poor when he arrived back at Galway. Didn't look fit. If they can get him back to the football he played when he was with Longford in 2013, then it's a great signing. But I haven't seen the best Ryan Connolly since then.
Yeah, they brought in Siddiqui from Hibernians up in Scotland there. Goalkeeper, is he?
I'm not sure on that one. Interesting signing, though.
Okay, he probably isn't, so I'm going to get slated afterwards. But bit concerned. They've lost a lot of experience, though, Harps, Kieran. Crotaro, he's retired. Daniel O'Reilly, we talked about already. And Keith Cowan, who I always thought was a decent
defender. Were big fans of Keith Cowan. Didn't have his best campaign last year, but again, always good to have those players around the place. Mikey Place looks a great signer for Galway. I think they've done good business there. They've lost experience, Harps, but I've been speaking to a couple of people at the club and I'm told to watch this space on Harps. There could be some big names coming in, so maybe we'll move on from Harps for now, and in a week or two we might chat about them again.
Okay, massive changes at Waterford, Kieran. I think there's a few question marks about whether whether Lee Power was going to continue funding the side.
They've left it late in the day of their business because of that, but I think they've done okay.
They have. It's just a case of how is this team going to gel?
Yeah, my takeaway.
Look, in Sambone, Scott Allardyce is exciting. Not quite sure what Graham Cummins they're going to get. Kevin O'Connor's a good signing. Not so sure about Michael O'Connor. For me, he's never really lit the place up. But look, there's some decent signings in there. They're going to miss El Bouzedi. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's gone as low as Lincoln, to be honest, because I think he's potential.
Disappointed by that. Again, a little bit like Jamie McGrath. We know El Bouzedi is such a technically gifted player to play at that level. I'm not sure if that's the best move from. One that I highlighted last year was Rory Feely. I thought he looks an excellent player. That's a great signer for Pats. The way I had expected him to play under Stephen O'Donnell, attacking football, he should be bombing on from the fullback position. Big loss for Waterford there.
Let's talk about Pats then. I mean, we sort of had them as outside chances for the league last season, didn't we? And talked them up.
Yeah.
And
never delivered.
Never really happened for them, did they? Can you see anything different this season?
I really like the signing of Jason McClelland. I think he's a very clever little player. Yeah. Conor Kearns, good goalkeeper. Rory Feely there, I've mentioned. Robbie Benson, if they get any sort of a tune out of him, what a player to have on their hand. Shane Griffin, again, just like Feely, good attack and full back. So I think we're getting an indication already early here of how Stephen O'Donnell's Pats are going to play. I think they're going to be good to watch. Again, do they have a goal scorer in that team?
A little bit surprised to see Rhys McCabe go. He's gone to Brechin in Scotland. My Scottish team.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And how is that? How is your team?
Brechin, well, they're quite low and they get horrendous attendances. But one of the sides of the pitch is just a bush, a massive bush.
All right, okay. Yeah. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
apart from that, players that have left, Mikey Drennan, obviously. Again, he didn't have his best time last year, did he?
No.
Connor Clifford, I think he did okay last season, so it's slight loss. Toner never delivered on.
He came with such promise, but unfortunately he had so many individual mistakes. You know,
obviously O'Donnell got a couple of games in towards the end of last year. He's had a good look now. He's got rid of who he feels he doesn't need, and he's brought in some exciting young players. I'm excited for Pats going forward.
Yeah, well, it remains to see if they can match what we thought they would do last season. So we shall see. Now then, your mates, Cork.
Cork, okay. Very young side, John.
It's to me, it looks like he's completely shaking it up. But I'm interested in Charlie Fleming's a decent signing from Cove. He's a decent
Coleman
player.
Would be the one that excites me the most.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Dylan McGlade, player we know very, very well. Scored a lot of goals in the First Division. Can he do it at Premier Division level? And if you speak to a lot of neutrals, they feel Cork are going to struggle this season. Is Dylan McGlade the type of player you can rely on in a relegation scrap if Cork were to be in any type of predicament such as that?
It depends. I remember McGlade playing against Cork in the Cup and he was anonymous. Mm. But then again, there were matches where he was outstanding for Longford.
He's a player, he said it himself on shows, he doesn't like the track and back part of the game, does he?
No, he doesn't, no. But he can be box office, Kieran.
Yeah.
That's one thing for sure, can Dylan. And, you know, I think he's a decent signing. If out of the signings they've made, he's the standout to me.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Corey Galvin, good signing for me. Good, exciting, wide player. Conor Davis as well. Never really got a crack at Derry, but we've seen what he done with UCD. I think he's a very interesting signing. Aside from that, I'm looking there.
I think he's just taken a punt on a few of these. I'm looking at these two signings from the lower leagues in England. So, Rayon Dillon, Corinthian Casuals, and Henry Ochieng from Wingate and Finchley. You've probably never heard of them, even.
No, have you? You're a man for the lower clubs in England.
Well, they're both play in the seventh tier in England. So you can see the level that they're at. And Wingate and Finchley, average attendance of 140. Corinthian attendance is around 250. I don't know. Unless not quite sure what he's seen. He's obviously seen something in these two lads, but...
And Joe Redman coming in on loan from Birmingham City as well.
Yeah, but he's an underage player, isn't he, I think. Look, we'll see.
I just think very young side. Look, we know the type of football Neil Fenn's going to play. It's a very attractive style of football. But at times with Longford, at the other end of the pitch, that there was frailties because obviously you're playing a more risky style of football in terms of playing out from the back.
I think the signings are... scream about what the budget is at Cork this season.
Yeah, you've taken the words out of my mouth there, but I just would worry if this team fall behind early on in games.
I think the failure to attract enough attendances last year, but they were crazy budgeting for the amount of people that they thought they were going to get in at Turner's Cross. And you know, I think they're going to have a struggle this season. And
this is either going to be a great success, he's going to have a young team that's going to play great football, or it's going to be an absolute disaster.
Relegation battle for me, I'm afraid.
Okay, we'll wait and see on that one. And obviously we'll get a look at Cork City this weekend. They're playing Longford Town in a friendly. But that's our brief overview of the Premier Division. Do you want to move on to the First Division, John?
We might as well, because we can whiz through a few of the teams, because we won't know too much about some of these signings. But we'll start with Athlone, our friends up the road.
It's going to be the same as last season, really, isn't it? I don't think they're going to compete. A new manager in place.
Yeah. I can't see too much excitement there. I mean, they've lost the real player that I sort of rated, Aaron Brilley. I thought he was a decent enough player. He's gone. I mean,
Keelan Dillon as well. He was one that could always pop one in from 20 yards here or there.
These are you know, they're not. Let's face it, they're not light up players for the league, are they? You know, so
they've re-signed Darren Meehan, and that's a bit of experience in there. But
yeah,
again, it's going to be a young side. I mean, they're signing players from the likes of Tullamore Town. That'll kind of tell you what market they're fishing in at the moment. I just can't see how they compete.
Cavan Teely should be. They have a few outs, so they're going to miss. And to me, they're going to miss some big players. I mean, we're going to. How many times am I going to get the Manly brothers mixed up this season, Kieran? We can have a sweep on that. But Rob Manley, I mean, massive goal scorer, massive miss. That's going to be.
I mean, it was always going to happen, wasn't it? When they didn't get through the playoffs, the Vultures were going to swoop after such a fantastic campaign last year. They've lost Manley, they've lost McGuinness, they've lost Jack Chu, Connor Crowley. They've lost their Japanese player as well, Sasaki, who was doing quite well when he came into the league. They've just lost. And Jack Watson's one I really like in midfield. I think he's a hugely underrated player. They've announced a 33-man squad. They have plenty of bodies there. That's not going to be an issue. They've kept Connor Keeley, which is good because he's solid at the back. But for me, I can't see how they compete at the same level as they did last year, losing all those players.
No, they've lost the spine of the team. And to me, Jack Chute's going to be a big miss as well. Yeah. So, look, I think, you know, for all how well they did last season, I don't think they're going to
repeat it. On the First Division, though, of course, let's just presume for a moment it's a 10-team league. Shamrock Rovers B coming in and Limerick don't have a representation in there. If Rovers are to finish in the top half, you'd only have to finish in the top five or six to reach the playoffs. So can that still be a goal for Cavan Teely?
Kieran, we don't even know how the league's going to line up. So it's a little bit pointless going on this. I think they'll struggle this season.
Okay.
I really do, yeah. Another team that'll be struggling around that area would be Cove to me, Kieran. I talked about Charlie Fleming earlier. I think he's a decent signing for Cork, but a few different players in there at Cove, but you know, with the budget they're working at and what they've got, re-signing Paul Hunt's good sign, Ian Turner as well, that's a big signing for them. He would be one of their key players, but I can't see anything different.
Kevin Taylor as well is a great re-signing.
Can you see anything different for Cove?
No, I think much of the same. Again, they'd always be hard to beat, hard to break down. Of course, they don't have Hendo this year as well.
Yeah.
That's a shame because he's a great character within the league, obviously.
Who are we going to get on to interview?
Yeah, we'll get him on at some stage. He's still involved in the league with Shells, of course. Yeah. But I just don't see them being as strong as in previous years.
Okay, we'll move on to Bray.
Bray are an interesting one again, aren't they? Because you look at the names they brought in, they're names we know. They brought in Aaron Barry from Cork. Didn't have the best time at Cork, but he's stepping down to First Division level here. Gary Shaw, you know what you get from him. Tristan Noah Kaufman didn't see a lot of football with Longford last couple of seasons, but definitely has potential. And Watson from Cavan Teely is one I've mentioned. For me, I'm surprised in one sense that Gary Cronin, there wasn't maybe more mutterings about his position towards the end of last year. You remember last year, Bray were one of the sides everyone was looking at because of the players they brought in.
Yeah.
They didn't deliver on that. They didn't make the playoffs. Cavan Teely got in ahead of them, which was a great achievement for Cavan Teely. But for Bray, it was a poor campaign. So in one way, it's good to see your manager been back then. They're giving him a second chance. But for me, if they're not delivering this year, it's got to be big question marks.
I think he needs a good start to the season. He has to have a good start in the Shield or whatever the hell is going to be the start of the season. But he needs a good start to the season, Kieran.
Overall, your thoughts on the squad? Gary Shaw, obviously, is the big name there, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think they'll miss Huey Douglas as to what he brings to the team.
They've lost Williams, of course.
Exactly. And, you know, we know all about Dylan McGlade and the spark.
Williams
and
McGlade, that's a lot of goals gone out of your team.
It is, yeah, because we know how many goals he can give you from midfield, McGlade.
Because Gary Shaw, We're big fans of him, but he's not a prolific goal scorer. We've seen when you partner him with a Davy O'Sullivan what he can do. If you had Dean Williams up alongside Gary Shaw,
that's why I surprised so much last season that they didn't play Drennan and Shaw up front.
We discussed a lot that last year. But for me, I just think they've lost a lot of goals out of the team. They should be in the top. Look, they should be top.
They'll be top half, but I can't see him challenging for the title.
Move on or
Shield.
Move on to Drogheda.
All right. Well, they've had a couple of good signings. I'm quite impressed with the recruitment there. Jack Chu, we talked about. Hugh Douglas. They're going to be solid at the back.
Yeah. And they've kept the big players from last year, haven't they? They've basically kept the vast, vast majority of their squad.
And good news for anybody going there as well, that they're not going to get hit by the stray balls from Paul Skinner's goal kicks.
Oh, John. I was at the Dundalk Drogheda game the other night. Drogheda, well organised, didn't show much, if anything, going forward. But you could see Chris Lyons. He just has that little spark. He is that little bit upstairs. He knows he can see what he's going to do before he gets the ball. He's going to be crucial again for them this year.
They'll want to go one better this season. They'll be up there, make no bones about it.
Longford or Drogheda, who do you give? They're joint favourites with the bookmakers. I would give Drogheda a slight edge on the basis they've kept the vast bulk of their squad. Good experience. They've added well. They've been up there consistently the last couple of seasons. Tim Clancy's still the boss, whereas Longford have had a bit of change. I would make Drogheda slight favourites.
It's so hard to tell the difference. It's a coin toss for me at the moment.
Okay. Galway, a team a lot of people are flagging up as a potential outsider.
Project DNA does not apply.
Yeah.
It's gone out the window, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's not too many of these signers that are locals.
No, we're talking Hawke's Bay United, Helsinki, the return to the league of Michal Schlingerman, which I'm delighted to see. Yeah, he's good. Mikey Place, Shane Duggan. There's some good signings in there.
Yeah, and they've kept the promising youngsters they had last season. Obviously, it was a bit of a mix and match at times last year, but the players that impressed, they've managed to keep them. The likes of Connor Barry there, Mark Ludden,
it's Connor Maloney. It's a definitely improved team. Yeah. They're going to do a lot better than last season.
Yeah, can they challenge for the title?
Well, I was talking about Galway at 6-1. They're one of the bookies, and I was saying, what is there there that's giving them so short? And I got choked back at rather a lot, saying, have you seen the signings? And when you look at it, you know, that's a pretty good squad they've put together.
Mikey Place is the one for me. I think he'll get goals in this team.
Yeah.
Scored a beautiful one against Harps in pre-season. They defeated Harps in a pre-season friendly. So, I think they'll do well. I'd have them in the top 3 or 4 anyway.
Yeah,
I think, though, it's very difficult to put a squad together like this and challenge straight away. I think it'll take a season or two for everything to come into play there.
It's going to take a while to work out.
I think Longford and Drogheda are more established over the last couple of seasons. Galway could be the best of the rest, though.
Talk about Wexford. I mean, they desperate struggle last season, wasn't it, for them? And can you see anything different this season?
Well, there's a few names we'd be familiar with there. Kaleem Simon. He's never done it, has he?
No.
Patrick O'Sullivan from Longford Town, young player. Really, really like the look of him. I'm disappointed that Longford haven't kept him on.
He got very little game time.
Yeah,
though,
but he looks like a player that definitely has potential. And, you know, people question the Wexford having a team like that in the league. They don't get big crowds. They're not challenging high up the table. But this is where they come into play. They're giving young players a chance to play senior first team football. And it's good to see for young players like that that they're scratching around under 19s football. They're not really getting a chance at the clubs like Longford. To go and play first team football for Wexford at loan, that's definitely their place in the league at the moment. And hopefully Wexford can continue to grow as a club, because nobody wants to see teams only getting 100 people in the gate, you know?
No, exactly. Talk about Longford Town then. So joint favourites, we have them with Drogheda.
Yeah, was very impressed with them last night in Oriel Park, on and off the ball, but particularly on the ball.
They've kept the squad together pretty much, Kieran. The only big loss I can see is Anto Breslin.
Yeah, well, of course, they've lost Conor Kenner to retirement. He's going to play Leinster Senior League, but he's retired from the League of Ireland. Absolutely huge loss. Is that the worry? The back line might be slightly weaker than last
definitely
year?
Definitely for me. I think they've got everything going forward. I think that front three of Manly English and Dean Burney is going to scare a lot of defences.
Dean Byrne, if you haven't got a chance to get out and watch Dean Byrne, keep an eye on him this year if you're going to a First Division game. He is an absolutely phenomenal talent, and he was swinging the hips and the ankles last night in Oriel Park, leaving defenders for dead, and he's going to have a fantastic campaign.
Yeah, yeah, he's one that I was surprised that Town managed to re-sign. I thought Longford. I think he needs to add a few more goals to his game.
They came up short in the playoffs last year against Cabinteely. It was disappointing, but they had five players in the first division team of the year, and they've essentially kept all of those apart from Anto Breslin, and Ade Irvine should have been in that team as well. They've managed to keep him. He's going to have another great year.
Yeah,
the ones that have stood out in pre-season in terms of new players that come in: Matthew O'Brien, 16-year-old. And I've never seen a youngster as confident on the ball as this kid. He looks an absolute player. I know Dara Doyle's very confident about his chances as well. And Eric Abelou from Shamrock Rovers, left back. Again, another. These youngsters coming through, they're so, so confident on the ball. He can beat a man. Maybe he'll have to work on his position a little bit. Obviously, take a while to get used to senior football. But he looks a talent. And look, you've mentioned Rob Manley. He hasn't scored yet in pre-season. I mentioned it to Dara Doyle last night. You'd like to see him get a goal just before the season starts to get his eye in. Yeah. But he's making all the right runs. He's everything that Dobbs didn't offer last season. His hold-up play is absolutely phenomenal. He can lay a ball off. And we've seen last year with Cabo, he knows exactly where the net is.
Yeah, so, top two?
Yeah, they should be.
Okay, good stuff. UCD then. So, for me, the big loss is Liam Scales for a start.
Yeah, again, I suppose we're not going to really know what we're going to get from UCD until the season starts. But at UCD, when one cycle of players ends, and this cycle has definitely ended because, as you said, they've lost Scales, they've lost McKellen, they've lost Connor Kearns, they've lost Richie O'Farrell, and before that, they lost Georgie Kelly.
Mm.
There's always another cycle of players coming somewhere down the line. Whether that's this season, whether it's going to be that quick that they'll be able to get enough players produced and ready to play at a high level, we'll wait and see. But there's always talented players coming through. And they lost 7-1 to Dundalk in pre-season, but they actually played some nice attacking football at times. They were very, very vulnerable at the back. Typical UCD team, trying to play out from the back. They got caught out a number of times. But they had a player up front. I think it was Colin Whelan on the night that scored the goal. And he looked very, very tidy indeed. So he's perhaps one to watch that might get a few goals in the first division. But overall, I wouldn't expect them to challenge for the title. Whether they can make the playoffs, again, we won't really know more about UCD until the season itself starts.
Yeah, sure. I can't see them doing as well. I can't see them challenging this season, Kieran, just because of the amount of players that they've lost. And, they were players that we like the look of last season.
I just don't think you can ever write UCD off at this level. Nobody expected them to win the first division a couple of seasons ago under Colly O'Neill, but they did, and they were phenomenal. So never write them off.
No. Okay.
And you've Shamrock Rovers B down there, but
nothing to tell you about.
There's nothing we can talk about there. So that's the first division. I guess we'll round off the show by speaking about another situation that's developing at the moment, and that's the potential of a referee strike, perhaps. What have you made of the ongoing developments here?
Yeah, it's worrying, isn't it? You can't, with all that's been going wrong, I think this has just slightly gone under the radar a little bit, and you can't have a match with that referee, so this has to get sorted out.
We have Paul Chute on the show. We're going to speak to him now. We're going to speak to him about his career. Obviously, he's announced his retirement from the league, but we do ask him as well about the ongoing situation with the referee, so we might as well bring that to you now. Here is Paul Chute. Now, something of a rarity for you this week's folks. We've got a referee on the line, and he's just recently announced his retirement from the League of Ireland, but I'm sure you're all well aware of who it's going to be. It's Paul Chute, who joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Paul, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kieran. Cheers. Thanks a lot.
So, Paul, I suppose this is going to be your first pre-season in quite a while where you're not going to be involved in the League of Ireland. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it is indeed. I'll have to say I miss it. Obviously, all the pre-season friendlies are getting going now. I've gone to one or two, actually, to draw the matches. But, I suppose it'll only sink in, really, when the league kicks off. But lucky enough, I suppose I'm still involved refereeing the Leinster Senior League, so that'll keep me going. And I still have, with Jack playing with Drogheda, I'd still have ties with the League of Ireland, so I'll still get around to see faces and supporters and fans, and it's good that way, that I'm not just walking away totally.
Yeah, for anyone that's just listening in and wondering what the connection is there with Drogheda, Jack Chute has moved from Cabinteely to Drogheda, and is Paul's son, so that's an interesting one, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because I suppose I wouldn't be totally flavour of the month up in Drogheda because I did the 2013 Cup Final Drogheda and Sligo, and I hands up made a mistake which probably had a huge effect on them on the match and Sligo win the cup. But
refresh our memory on that one.
That's life, and I think I've tried to get over it. Whether I've totally got over it or not, I don't know. I know a lot of people in Drogheda haven't, but that's the way it goes.
For anyone that mightn't remember, refresh our memory on that. Is it the free kick you're referring to?
Yeah,
I think you're allowed to be taken quickly.
I wasn't sure. I blew the whistle. Didn't blow the whistle, and there was a quick free kick, and Sligo scored. And at the end of it was 3-2 on the day. It was a great final, actually. Great goals in it. And I made a mistake. Didn't even realise that I had made a mistake. And then everything that went on, I sent off Derek Prendergast Dale. So that's the way. So I was having a stormer of a game up to about 80 minutes. And then I don't know where the concentration went or whatever. And made a mistake. And that's the way it is, and you live by them and you die by them, and I should have died by it on that one, and I suppose I did.
I think you were just caught out by the genius of it. Wasn't it Joanne Doe, I think I'm right in saying, that chipped it over the wall to Danny North?
Free kick, yeah. I still think the Drogheda were pretty set up at the back, and I don't think, I won't say, I don't know if it did affect it, but it was a super free kick, and it was some super, super goals there. I can't think of the other guy, the big guy that was playing for Sligo, scored a great goal as well. The English guy, the tats all over him, I can't think of his name. That's the way, anyway.
And it's funny you should actually bring up that game, because someone asked me the other day what was the best League of Ireland game I was ever at, and that one was right up there for me. It was an amazing final, so it's amazing that should come up.
Yeah, it was. I think it was last 15 minutes, there was goal after goal after goal. Yeah, it was. And, so that's the way. Yeah, someone had to be a winner.
And speak us through.
Sure. They might eventually let me away rub and draw. I don't know. It'll take Jack to do something special up there, I think, for forgive me. But anyhow, that's life.
Yeah, he might need to win them promotion or something. But
exactly.
Moving on.
Cup.
Talk us through the decision to step away from the league this season.
Going back, we'll say, about 7 or 8 years ago, I would have been coming up to retirement because it was mandatory to retire at 47. And then because of, I think, European age discrimination laws and this FIFA and UEFA changed it, that you didn't, that there was no cut-off, that you could stay refereeing. It was up to National Association to decide what age you could retire at, and the FAI and in Europe as well said that you could stay refereeing once you passed the fitness tests and the laws of the game tests, and you were accepted. So I stayed on. I was 52 last year, and I felt I was pushing. I had never injuries in my life. I got a knee injury last year, which set me back. I didn't do a huge amount last year. I was doing a lot of fourth officials. And I just felt that 52, 53, I mean, when do you stop? And I felt that was probably the right time to not stop, but to move on down into the Leinster Senior League. And it's a new challenge. And I was a bit afraid, to be honest, that I might have been, if I was hanging in there, that I was maybe stalling some guys at the other end, younger guys coming through, even though I know I was a help as a fourth official, the younger referees. But I felt that, everything has come to an end, and I felt it was the right time. So, and I stand over it, you know. And I was lucky enough to get the additional assistant referee behind the goal in the cup final this year, which was a great bonus as well. So,
And you mentioned there young referees coming through, and that's something we would have discussed on this show last year. I would be of the view that probably there's not enough coming through. And you often hear when you're criticising referees on shows, and a lot of referees will come out and say, well, maybe these guys should pick up a whistle and try it. I'm one of the people that did try it for a couple of years, so I have a small insight into it. But just on your view of referees coming through at the moment, do you feel there's enough coming through? Are we experiencing a shortage of referees in Ireland? What's your opinion on that?
Well, no, probably at the elite level, it's probably not enough. Elite, as in League of Ireland, it's probably not a lot coming through, although there are some good guys. They have a school of excellence in the FAI, which I think has produced good referees. I think that the standard is certainly in general, the standard has improved. There are some good young guys coming through. It can be difficult enough breaking into the Premier Division. But there's guys like, we'll say, Rob Hennessy and Rob Harvey, who have done really well. They've done well on the international front as well. As regards referees in general, I'm involved actually with the Referee Society, and we have beginners classes where we take on in the younger referees and try and get them to stay within the game. I think if they get over the first year or the first 18 months of their refereeing, they'll probably stay within the game. But there's a huge turnover of guys doing the beginner's course and then just doing a couple of games again. Excuse the French, pissed off and with the aggro and the hassle they get, and they just don't see that the few quid is worth it, you know. But at the other end of things, if they follow through into the League of Ireland and onto the international front, yeah, it's a good sideline. They deserve everything they get. There are good structures in place in the even outside of the financial problems with the FAI, there are good structures in place within the FAI and in the League of Ireland for referees. And yeah, I think the future is bright, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay, that's good to hear. And it's always good to get an insight from a referee. And it's great to have yourself on the show tonight. We had Alan Kelly on the show as well in the past, so
great,
I think we've done our bit to try and get the referees that they're say on this show. So, in terms of getting ready for pre-season, I think a lot of people are nearly of the opinion a ref just turns up with the whistle and the cards and off they go.
Yeah.
How hard is this time of the year for a referee?
Well, it's certainly changed. Obviously, I was a long time involved refereeing 20 years ago, and 20 years. And obviously, as we all know, that we all go watching League of Ireland matches, the standard of fitness of players has improved hugely.
Yeah.
There's no fellas going around with, as I say, Ned Kelly's or Bellies anymore. The fitness levels are very high. And obviously, the referees have to be of a high fitness level. And they would have a few, probably a month, about 5-6 weeks down tools after the end of the season. But generally, they should be back. Most of them would have been back training mid-December, getting ready for a seminar there a couple of weeks ago. Well, we didn't have it because I wasn't on it, but the Elite Panel, League of Ireland Panel, have a seminar at the end of January where they do a fitness test and they do laws of the games test. And they won't be allowed a referee at the start of the season unless they pass both. I think generally the fitness levels in the league, obviously, as you get older, it gets a bit tougher. But the fitness levels of referees, I would say, are up there, and they have to be up there. And it's unfair on players. If the referees aren't fit, it's unfair on the players that have to have a referee that wouldn't be up to their level. So, yeah, there's a lot of work goes in. We train as a group on a Tuesday night all over the country. There's about four different groups train together. And you have to go. And yeah, I would say there's about at least three, if not four, fitness tests throughout the season. And your fitness is monitored. So yeah, that's it.
And you mentioned there, obviously, the seminar takes place and new rules are discussed. And this season, we're going to see a couple in the League of Ireland. It won't be new to fans of football because we've seen these laws already come into the likes of the Premier League in England. Obviously, the defender can now receive the ball inside the penalty area.
Players having to
go off at the nearest point, such things as that. How easy would it be, though, on the first day of the League of Ireland season for a League of Ireland referee to blow the whistle and look for a goal kick to be retaken just because it is something new? Because obviously last year, when the League of Ireland runs...
Not, because I would say a lot of the referees would referee probably other leagues as well. And because the League of Ireland was in mid-season, the new laws didn't come in. These laws would have come in last 1st July, I think it was. So a lot of referees would have experienced them before Christmas.
Okay.
So they probably would be used to them, and they'd obviously have seen them on television, and they'd be fairly well used to them. The problem would be sometimes that for international referees throughout the season, sometimes the international referees have been operating in the new laws, and yet they're operating in the new laws the old laws in the League of Ireland. So that can be confusing for them because they going from game to game, they could be operating in different laws. Now there's not huge changes, but there are changes. I would say most players and fans will be well adapt to the changes from looking at football on television, and they know them, I'd say, fairly well now at this stage, you know. So I don't think it'll cause a problem, I don't think.
And look, you mentioned the seminar there. Obviously, that has made the headlines. There is a bit of discontent among the refereeing ranks at the moment. We spoke off air there, I suppose, and we were saying it's great to see there has been some positives in recent days and weeks regarding the FAI situation. Have you spoken to any of your former colleagues? What is the feeling at the moment?
Not really. I don't want to say a whole lot because I'm out of the scene, but all I know is that there's good people involved. I know the guy, I won't say his name, who's taken over the mantle of referees manager. He's an ex-referee. He'll do his best for refereeing. I know he's under constraints, financial constraints, as of the whole the FEI. I think everyone will get around the table and eventually sort it out. I know it was disappointing that the seminar for everyone, including the new manager of the referees department. I knew it was disappointing for him. I know he didn't want it either, that the seminar had to be cut to a day and a half. But unfortunately, I think everyone wants the famous say, you have to cut your cloth to measure. I know that the finances in the FAI are under severe strain, and I think everyone probably has to realise that this is the way we're going to be for a while. I think they will eventually come around, and everyone wants to do their best for refereeing. So I think it will be sorted. I understand where the referees are coming from as well, because they put in a huge amount of time and effort, and they feel the supports probably aren't there. But I think we'll come to the start of the season, everything will be sorted, and we'll move on, and everything will be a positive vibe around the whole lot.
And look, before we go tonight, anyone that goes to Ireland games, particularly away from home, will be familiar with yourself and your very famous hat with the pin badges. I know I've bumped into you a few times myself, and Jack as well will be very regular on the away trips. I take it you're going to Slovakia?
I am indeed, yeah. I've booked Slovakia, and then I've booked Bosnia as a backup, just in case we do Slovakia. So hopefully we're going on to Bosnia and Sarajevo. I know it's a bit of a pain, like, you know, I know we really want to qualify through the Euros, sorry, the qualifiers direct, but I suppose we have this backdoor situation. I think it was originally hard to warm to it, you know, because it seemed to be we got a playoff when perhaps we didn't really, really deserve it. There's four teams now, Slovakia, ourselves, Bosnia and Northern Ireland. I think we're probably all not too dissimilar levels, so I think I think we can probably pip them and pip both teams and maybe get there. But, you know, I fancied us against to beat Denmark in the Aviv, and it didn't happen. So I don't want to be overly optimistic, to be honest. I suppose maybe it's just because the whole vibe of the FEI at the moment and everything. I suppose everyone's on a little bit of a negative, but hopefully we can turn that negative around and maybe do something in March. And yeah. Hopefully qualify.
Paul, absolutely fantastic speaking to you. Thanks for joining us, and best wishes with the semi-retirement, we'll call it.
Best luck for everyone in the League of Ireland. Hopefully League of Ireland has been progressing at all levels, refereeing, players, everyone, and let's try and get people to get out and support their local club, and it's a good time for the league, so best of luck to everyone.
Brilliant, Paul. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Cheers. Good luck.
Great to get the views of Paul Chute, and hopefully that situation can be rectified, and best luck to Paul in his retirement from the league. Before we go, John, President's Cup coming up on Sunday. Prediction?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, you've seen Dundalk a couple of times. Yeah. They've not lit...
They blew me away against UCD.
Yeah.
Very first game out, you're expecting that just to be an exercise in knocking off the rust. No. But they came out like they had never been away. They played phenomenal football that night. But since then, they went away to Spain. They put in two very good performances against CSK and Cluj without getting a win. But obviously,
two very good sides in European competition.
Played really, really well. But since they've come back from Spain, they've looked a little bit sluggish. And that was something that happened last season as well. It always seems to take a little bit out of them.
Do you know, I'm seeing parallels with last season, and I can see Rovers getting off to a better start than Dundalk. I think it's going to take Dundalk a little while to settle down. So for that reason alone, I'm going to go where the Rovers win in the President's Cup.
Yeah.
But I think it could be similar in that I think Rovers could start well, open up a bit of a lead, and then could Dundalk chip it away like last season?
Well, does the fact that Shamrock Rovers won the FAI Cup towards the end of last season, does that help if they get to that situation? Say they're 9-10 points clear again. Surely the fact that they've gone and beaten Dundalk in a cup final like that, does that give them confidence? They have that silverware under their belt. Now this is their year to go and kick on and win a league.
Just depends how well Dundalk settle to me. I can't see any other challenges. Between the two of them. Somebody might start well, but we'll fade. But I get the feeling it's going to be very, very similar to last season. I just think Rovers have a great settled side. They've not done too much business, but I still think they're missing the striker.
Yeah.
They could start well. Green chips in with a few goals early on. But I think when that Dundalk side settles down a little bit more, I think they'll do what they did last season.
Okay, so final two questions before we go. Scoreline prediction for Sunday and who's going to win the Premier Division and the First Division?
I'm going for 1-0 victory to Rovers.
Okay.
I think they might just have the edge over them early this season. Who's going to win the Premier League? Dundalk.
I'm going 1-0 as well to Shamrock Rovers. And I'm going Dundalk to win the Premier Division. And I'm going to go with Drogheda to win the First Division.
Drogheda. Oh, Longford.
Okay. And we'll kick off our old prediction league here, like we did last year. We're going to have to get a goal scorer for the game on Sunday. I will go Jack Byrne.
You and Jack Byrne?
Yeah. Penalty.
Ronan Finn.
Oh, they won't like that one, would they? Listen, folks, that's it. Between the Stripes LOI podcast, it's back with a bang. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's pre-season special. We'll be back again. Will we be back next week? Yeah, we will. We'll come back next week, won't we? Yeah, we will. We will. But as we said at the start of the show, we are going to be operating slightly different to last season because of our situation, living apart and our work life and everything. The show might not go up on the same day of the week as it did last year. It was always on a Wednesday night. So just make sure you renew your subscription on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Keep an eye on our social channels as well, and you won't miss the show from week to week. It will be on a weekly basis.
I think I should say something about the fact we're living apart. You're saying now that we weren't actually living together, Kieran.
No. I don't know how your wife would like that. Anyway, folks, that's it. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to share it far and wide and tell your friends Between the Stripes LOI podcast is back.